all had a nice rest last night. And nice to see Venerable Metaji here. And also, hope you had a good breakfast. Maybe some of you did some yoga. Maybe all limbered up, ready to sit. And it's nice to see everybody's faces today. So we're all liberated from masks for now. I'm a little nearsighted though, so I really can't see the people in the back anyway. But at least people in the front I can see more clearly. So probably you're getting more settled now to the retreat, but it's just the first day. Yeah, with a weekend retreat, the first day is like the only day. So it's like the first and the only full day. But it takes a little time to settle. Oh, there's Christina. Can I just ask you one thing? Last night during the guided meditation, could people hear me? Because I'm told my voice gets a bit soft when I do guided meditations. But you could hear me? Okay. So, okay, great. Thank you, Christina, for that. And, right. But yes, about getting settled in. So I thought maybe, you know, the thing is, a lot of times in meditation, people who are used to meditating on the breath or have been instructed on meditating on the breath, they try to jump to the breath before their mind is really ready. And it takes a little time to settle down and for the mind to calm down after you've come from the busyness of your normal lives. That you don't have to be in any real rush to jump to the breath, because it's going to be there for you as long as you're alive. It's not going anywhere. So there's no need to really like feel like you have to get onto it right away. But feeling what your mind feels like, you know, doing. Like, it takes a little while, even for me, even though we're at the monastery and we're like in a quiet place and we meditate every day. When I come back from the day is set up in the monastery with the morning part, we have like a bit of work period and a bit of like work meeting and talking to people and doing stuff. That's like busy for us, you know. But after coming back from the busy part of the day, when I come back to my dwelling, you know, it's still like rewind of like what people said today to you and like, oh, there's some misunderstandings or this and that. And then there's a bit of rewind that goes on, and I can't just be like, okay, right, enough, onto the breath. I mean, if you're a very advanced meditator, you can. You know, if you're Ajahn Brahm, you can be like, well, I leave it at the door of my kuti and then like plonk, you know, but you know, if you're not there yet, it's not like that. And it comes in with you through the door a little bit, you know. So then it takes a little while to let it unwind. And that's totally legit, you know. It's not like, oh no, I'm not meditating. Meditation is a broad word. Meditation, you know, can encompass anything when you're bringing awareness to your experience. That thing about that open, receptive awareness to whatever you're experiencing. So that includes all your thoughts and all your like conversation rewinds and all your like, oh, I should have said this. Did they understand that or whatever? All of that. That's totally legitimate object of meditation. And as long as you're bringing awareness to that and interrupting the flow of thoughts, that's all part of the process. It's not less than. It's not like, oh no, I'm not really meditating yet. Yeah, anytime you're aware of what's going on right now in the present moment, as it really is, that's meditating. So I feel like I wish I had known that, you know, like when I was starting out. You know, I would get so frustrated with, oh, you know, I can't stay on the breath, always thinking, or, oh, you know, I have all these feelings coming up, all these emotions coming up, and it's like, oh, I'm not meditating yet. But actually, there's ways to work with those thoughts and emotions, to practice with them, to be there with them. And that's all legitimate part of meditation. And so I thought I'd spend a little time today talking about that, and maybe we could do a little bit of, you know, meditation together, you know, trying it out. But the thing is, it's really important to let these things come up, to allow them to come up. Like, sometimes people who've been meditating for years don't realize that they're using their meditation on whatever object they choose, like the breath or something, as a way to repress their feelings or escape their feelings, you know, to kind of like oh, never mind, drop that, I'm coming to the breath, I'm staying on the breath. And especially if it's like feelings they find uncomfortable, you know, whatever that may be, whether it's like irritation or anger, anxiety, worry, you know, all of these things that, you know, aren't particularly fun to experience. Sometimes we can, without realizing, use meditation on the breath to like squelch that and be like, oh, I don't want to feel that. So, okay, I'm coming to the breath, I'm staying with the breath. And it's, in a way, it feels like that's the right thing to do. But actually subtly what's happening is you're repressing and you're not really allowing yourselves to experience, you know, what you really are feeling. And that actually comes back and hurts you in the in the future, because then it never really gets resolved. And actually for meditating on the breath to really happen in a way where it can progress further, it has to come from a mind that's actually already quite happy. A mind that's like purified to some extent, so that it naturally notices the breath, because that's the most obvious and beautiful thing to watch. But when you aren't at that place yet where the mind naturally does that, and you force yourself to be on the breath, then sometimes you're actually not dealing with stuff that has to be purified first. I'm not saying that I know that to be true for all of you or whatever, but I'm just saying that in my experience, that's something that I've seen has happened to me. And so learning to face these emotions is kind of something that I wasn't really sure how to do for a long time. And it's actually quite simple. It's just allowing yourself to feel it. Isn't that weird? Like, you think that a feeling, the word feeling is like, means like feel. So it should seem obvious that what we do is we feel feelings. But actually a lot of times in my life, I found I wasn't feeling my feelings. I was trying to like think about them and work them out and analyze why I was feeling this way or how to stop feeling this way. And I bypassed the simple process of actually feeling the feeling. And that's something that actually takes quite a bit of it takes a bit of stability to be able to do that. Oftentimes we do feel the feeling, but very quickly we find a way to escape it. And we all have different strategies for escape. So either, like for me, you might think about it or try to like work it out or like categorize it. Oh, this feeling is called this or that, or, you know. And so that's one way of like not actually feeling it. You're kind of like stepping away from the actual raw experience of the feeling and doing something about it. So you don't actually have to feel it. Or we might act it out by like, if we're angry or irritated, we might actually express that to the object of our anger and say something maybe not so nice or whatever to somehow release that feeling. But it's actually not allowing you to actually feel it, because you actually go into the action and the expression of it. And that takes you away from the raw feeling again. Or we might like, you know, not say anything outside, but then we just push it under and pretend it's not there. You know, sometimes if you have a misunderstanding or a conflict with someone, rather than actually talk about it, which sometimes gets messy, you just like, fine, I'm not going to say anything. But then you hold it in and you like stamp it down, and it's actually still there. And that anger or that resentment, it goes actually into your body, and actually sometimes it'll make you sick. You know, sometimes a lot of our illnesses come from that kind of, our feelings get repressed and they don't actually resolve, so they get stuck somehow in your organs and this or that. And I don't know enough about medicine, but I do know that stress does cause a lot of physical symptoms, and that's because those feelings haven't actually been felt properly. And that's something that we can learn to do. It's not something that is that hard, really. It's just, it's so against what we habitually do. So here you have the prime opportunity, because a lot of your escape routes are no longer available. So like if sometimes you're feeling like, you know, just uneasy about something, you might call up a friend or vent it out or something. But if we're doing that no phone thing, you can't do that. If we're doing noble silence here, you can't do that. And if you can't, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, you distract yourself by watching TV or watching a movie or listening to a nice song and taking that away from your experience. You get sort of distracted by the song or the movie, and you for a while you forget your troubles, you forget your feelings. And in a way it kind of like smooths it over for a while. But it doesn't really resolve it. It's still there somewhere. And as soon as the movie's over, or the song is over, or the conversation with your friend is over, that feeling is still lurking somewhere in your mind, and it's going to come up. And again, you feel it's like uncomfortable, and you find some other way to distract yourself. But okay, so here you can't do the entertainment. So that escape route is gone. And even, you know, talking, even without a friend, even talking to somebody else, not even on a topic related to that thing, not even if you're like trying to talk about your problem, but just talking to another human about something kind of allows you to distract yourself from your feelings. And that's a way sometimes we feel we get our comfort, our ease, but it's not really facing it. But here, when you don't have that outlet, you kind of have no choice but to actually see what's going on in your mind. And how does that feel when you don't have the outlets of expression, and you're bringing awareness in? So hopefully you'll notice if you are repressing and try not to continue that, and then see what comes up. See what feelings might come up, what thoughts might come up. And feeling that urge to distract yourself, you know, you might have an itch to, oh, I wish I could talk, or I wish I could just get up from here, or I wish I could, you know, could just go somewhere else, go to the beach or something. And when you can't, see how that feels. And if there that sense of like, ooh, I want to just escape, and when you can't, and just trying to, okay, then see and face what it is that's coming up. And that's actually like a really helpful practice you might start with doing on your cushion, but you can do it any time of your life, because feelings come up all the time, don't they? And that's something that that I found was just really helpful for me, just to learn how to actually experience my emotions in an uncomplicated way. And it sounds so easy, you know, it sounds so easy, but actually it's not that easy to do. So that's all right. It takes a little time and working with it over and over again. But the thing for me to remember is just the rule of thumb, or the direction to point your mind, is just whatever feeling arises, especially the uncomfortable ones, but even also the pleasant ones, to like go towards them. Like your instinct might be, if I don't know what your bête noire is, but like if you have like, oh, some kind of righteous indignation, that's my bête noire, you know, then if that comes up, you might want to like get away from it. That's your natural instinct, by thinking about it further, you know. But then to turn back and actually go towards it, go towards what it is that you find uncomfortable. It's like also some kind of martial arts, kind of like, you know, kind of like counterintuitive thinking, that you go towards the enemy. Well, don't call it the enemy, but you go towards what you find challenging and uncomfortable, and you go towards it rather than away from it. You lean into it rather than away from it. And if we have this sort of like reorientation of our natural instinct, like if you have a good sense of direction, you know, you might know that like the way to go is right, and when you turn right, it does lead you to the right direction. But for me, I have a terrible sense of direction, but my sense of direction is actually uncannily also accurate, because I'm always thinking I should do the opposite of what I should do. Like if, for instance, you know, the way to go to like cottage 6 is to turn right, I have this natural instinct, I think it's left. You know, my natural instinct is to turn left. And so what I have to remember to do is do the opposite of what it is my natural instinct is telling me to do, and I will generally be more likely to find the right way to wherever I need to go. And this is a similar way. Our brains are programmed to be like, ooh, uncomfortable, dangerous, go away from it. And then, you know, the thing that you learn is that actually the most helpful thing for you to do is the opposite of what you feel like you want to do, and which is to go towards it. And so that's really a very simple but important key in practice, is to go towards that uncomfortable feeling. And I know it's like so against our normal, like rational and even instinctual kind of feeling of what's right to do, because if you think about animals, right, they're always, if you see even like the kangaroos in the monastery, I mean, you would like to think that, oh, we monastics are full of metta and whatever, they shouldn't be afraid of us. But you know, they still scamper away if they see you. You know, their natural instinct is like, ooh, moving thing, whatever it is, a possible source of danger, I must scamper away. And immediately it's like, ch-ch-ch-ch. And so that's what we're trained to do. That's our survival instinct. Anything that seems mildly threatening to us or gravely threatening to us, our like way of preserving our life is to run away. And it makes so much sense in that sense. But working with our emotions, it's the opposite. Because unless we actually run towards them, unless we actually allow ourselves to experience it, it never gets aired and liberated. You know, like the only way for these things to actually stop haunting us is to actually just experiencing it and let it dissolve. And there's nothing you have to do more than that. It actually is quite simple. You just experience it. Just experience it without sort of acting out or repressing it. And then it just naturally evolves and flows on its own. And so that's something that was like almost unbelievable to me that it could be that simple. But one thing that got me to be very interested in trying out, seeing what happens when you just let it be and let yourself experience it, was reading something about a scientific, I think psychological experiment or neurological experiment that had been done, where the study showed that if you have a feeling, whatever it may be, let's say anger, and you don't actually think another thought related to the source of your anger, that feeling lasts no longer than a minute and a half. And I was like, no way, a minute and a half? I mean, I can be angry for like hours. What are you talking about, a minute and a half, you know? But actually, that really got me interested in trying it out. And then in this way, it wasn't forced. It was a natural curiosity to find out, is that true? Is that really true that it's only a minute and a half? And so the next time, and believe me, it isn't long before you have the next time you feel a bit of anger. And the next time, I was like, okay, let's see. Let's see if I don't think another thought about this whatever issue it is and just feel that feeling in my body, feel that anger in my body without thinking another thought about it and see how long it lasts. And I didn't have a clock in front of me, but it really wasn't long. It really probably was a minute and a half or less or whatever. And that's like startling news, isn't it? And I mean, that makes it so much more manageable. I mean, if all of these things, I mean, it just feels like they last a long time. It feels like you're angry for hours or angry for days or angry for 20 years over something somebody did to you. It feels like that. But if you break it down, it's actually bouts, little bouts of anger that just get prolonged because you feed it with another thought about that storyline you have going about it. So every time you feed it, it like gives it a bit more life, another minute and a half. And then you think another thought about it, another minute and a half, and then it kind of like, you know, prolongs the whole thing until it becomes a whole big, you know, anger party. And then it's quite unmanageable at that point. But if you catch it early, you know, and you do manage to not think another thought, see what happens. But the tricky part is the not thinking another thought about it. That's so far, that's a bit tricky to do, because we're thinky people. I mean, that's how we're different from animals, is our capacity to think, right? So that's what we like to do, and that's what we do more often than we probably need to. But with repeated practice, it does become possible to interrupt that habit, that instinct to think more about this thing that's causing you angst, to think more about it. You can learn to be like, no, I'm just gonna stop thinking. I'm gonna drop the storyline and see what happens. And I love this short, you know, very succinct teaching that sums it all up by this American Zen teacher. Her name is Charlotte Joko Beck. Don't know if any of you ever heard of her or read any of her stuff. I haven't actually read that much, but this one line, you know, that I remember reading about her teaching, I've used for like so long now. And it's drop the story, be in the body. Just drop the story, be in the body. It's so practical. And that's why last night, you know, I thought it'd be nice to start with a body sweeping, because that begins to, like, you know, develop your skills at being in the body, which seems so simple. But in our lives, you know, we are so often not in our bodies. I remember so clearly, like, when I was still a graduate student, I was, like, writing my thesis, I spent hours and hours in front of the computer, completely in my world of, like, words and facts and ideas and thoughts and, like, massaging them to some possibly intelligible thesis. But I was really out of touch with my body. I had no idea that, like, I was sitting in a bad posture or that my back was starting to hurt until, like one time, my back just froze up, you know, and I couldn't really move properly. I couldn't even drive myself to, you know, to get help, to take a taxi. And I was like, how did that happen? It suddenly came upon me, like, suddenly, you know. But it's because I had no idea that over these weeks and hours and days and whatever, I had probably been accumulating this wrong posture or bad position and muscle tightness until it really, like, came to a really crisis point. But I had no idea because I was completely out of touch with my body. I mean, people talk about having meditation experiences, we have out-of-body experiences. You don't have to do that. I mean, our normal daily life, we are out of our bodies all the time. And we have very little connection with what's actually going on in our physical body, which is actually so close to us, but yet so foreign to us in many ways. So learning how to do a bit of body sweeping, an awareness meditation that takes you through each part of your body. I mean, it can seem a little bit methodical or mechanical, but just running your awareness through every part of your body and feeling it, even the parts that are kind of blank or difficult to feel, helps us to get back in touch with our bodies and familiar with how to be aware with them. And that is like a stepping stone or a building block for being able to be aware of your emotions in your body. Because all of our emotions at a psychological or mental level always have a direct counterpart in the body, always. And so it's too hard to try to be aware of some amorphous, abstract feeling. But to be aware of its counterpart in the body is something that you definitely can contact, definitely can feel, if you turn your attention to it. And that's the way that you can stay with the body and drop the story. You can't just sort of drop the story and be left loose hanging. You know, your mind is like hungry for a place to land. So if you don't give it a place to land, it's going to go straight back into the story because that's where it likes to hang out. But if you do have something else for it to land that is grounding and very, like, concrete, you know, our bodies are not made of concrete, but they are, unlike everything else at John and Grove, and they're not made of concrete, but they are, like, more easy, tangible for your awareness to make contact with than some kind of floating feeling. So it's very helpful to do this whole drop the story, be in the body. And then when you feel the actual experience of your whatever it is, you know, that you're feeling, it can be interesting even to find out, well, where do I feel it? You know, when you say I'm angry, but where are you angry? Is it the chest? Is it the stomach? I mean, some people might be angry at the tip of their ear. I don't know, but probably not the tip of your ear. But just find out where. Or if you're anxious, where does that manifest? And how does it actually feel like? Is it a twisting, or is it a knotting, or is it some kind of a heaviness, or what is it? And it will vary, you know, depending on exactly what what type of manifestation or shade of that kind of feeling it is, or how you're feeling that day, and it can vary from person to person. So it's kind of quite intriguing, you know? I mean, if we start looking at our feelings as something intriguing, it makes them less scary to us. Oftentimes feelings seem scary because they're so like out of control, like they seem out of our control and they have this mysterious life of their own. And that's why we want to just run away, because they're a bit threatening. But if we actually just get curious about it, and like, what is this feeling that I call anger? What is this feeling I call sadness? What is this feeling I call boredom even, you know? What is it? You know, actually, really, where do I feel it? And what does it feel like? And even if it's uncomfortable, if we can resist that idea of I want to try to like make it go away, and then just seeing how it naturally does go away of its own. That's a way that we can actually learn from our feelings and learn to be with them. It's not something that you can give yourself a pep talk to some degree to try to kind of remind yourself to be open to them and open yourself to these feelings. But really, it has to come from something more deeply genuine, like a sense of curiosity or a sense of wonder or a sense of just like space. Like sometimes and I know some of you here are parents or whatever, you have children who are having a tantrum or they're you know, just going through a bit of an upset, and you just need to give them a little space for them to calm down. This is the same with our feelings. They just need a bit of space to just allow themselves to express themselves. And giving them that space is a kind of a kindness we can do for ourselves. Like if you ever had the experience when you were a kid growing up and you just sort of woke up from a nightmare or something, and you go to see mommy or daddy and you want a hug just to make it feel better. Like that kind of just embracing of that yucky feeling is something we can do for ourselves. So you can imagine when you have an uncomfortable feeling, that's almost like kind of like you're waking up from a nightmare and you just need a bit of comfort. And so that's what you can offer yourself through your awareness of it and giving yourself space to let that feeling be. And when you do that, just naturally, it kind of settles. So that's something that maybe we can work with. And you can't really, I mean, if some of you are already feeling really peaceful, that's great. don't mean to force you to have uncomfortable feelings. But if it so happens that you are feeling, and actually, you know, some people are threatened by peace. Some people, if they start to feel peaceful, they actually don't want to feel it because it's unfamiliar. So in the same way, the same principle applies even to so-called pleasant experiences or pleasant feelings. But if you are feeling a bit of, I don't know what it is you've been doing the previous days or weeks and what it is you're carrying into this retreat, but if there is anything uncomfortable, we can use this time to work with it. And even thinking a lot, like that may not have an emotional charge, but it can still be quite disturbing for many of us when we try to meditate. And there's lots of thoughts that keep going on and on, and you're like, oh, okay, don't think, and whatever, it makes them worse. So even that discomfort that comes from thinking can also be worked with in the same way of just finding out how that feels like in your body. And letting it be and letting it manifest. So all of this is all stuff that we can use as objects of meditation, so to speak. So nothing is for loss. So that's a little something that I wanted to talk to you about this morning. But before we do any sitting meditation, I thought maybe I should talk a little bit about walking meditation, because I don't know how many of you have ever done that. Has anyone ever not done walking meditation in here? Okay, so a number of you. So you might be wondering, what are these rooms here? What are these random carpets, you know? So those are the walking meditation rooms. And what are you supposed to do on those carpets? You're supposed to dress up in fancy attire and walk the red carpet. No, it's just a way to, you know, demarcate, you know, what direction to walk. But walking meditation is like so simple, actually, but it's just you walk Shall I show you? I mean, like, it seems almost like nothing to show, but I might as well just show you. So you just start at one end of the room. Actually, I'll just start here. Whatever. And I've found over the years, I'm kind of anchored to my microphone. I guess I can't walk that far. Okay, I'll just do a baby meditation walk. But it's good to do if you can. These rooms are about, like, I've counted. They're about, like, 15 to 17 steps. But if you want to walk longer than that, there's spaces outside. It's said that 25 to 30 steps is a good amount of space for you, but every person is different, so you can experiment. And just enough so that you have enough walking space that you're not, like, constantly turning around. Like, if you walk, like, five steps and you're turning around, you get very dizzy, you know. But enough space that you can kind of get into a rhythm, but not so long that you start to get lost in thought as you go off and kind of meander. So a reasonable amount of space. And then you just walk, dude. I mean, you know, you might want to compose yourself so it helps to maybe put your hands together, because somehow when you're swinging, it gets you a bit too, I guess, active. So you want to just put your hands together behind or in front, whatever feels comfortable. And you just walk at a pace that's comfortable for you. You don't have to walk super slow, like, you know, like slow motion, but just a pace that you feel is comfortable. And it can vary over the course of your meditation. You might start walking a bit fast and then slow down. But just to try to be with the feelings in your feet as you walk, just like, again, the body awareness, the sensations of your feet as you move. Okay, that's about as far as I can go. and then when you reach the end, you turn. And I know some like traditions, they turn in a very sort of orchestrated way where it's like 45 degrees, another 45 degrees, and 45 degrees. And that can be helpful because that helps you to like be a little more aware of your turning. But if it feels too stiff for you or a bit too like structured, you can just turn however you turn, you know, in a way that you don't fall and find yourself facing back the other way. And then you walk back again, however you like. And then you stop. And if you like, if you find that you're like thinking a lot or something, when you reach the end, you can just stop and just compose your mind or let your mind be composed. I find these rooms are great. These meditation rooms, they have like a real cave-like feeling. So when you stop, just listen to the room. And like magically, it like suddenly becomes very quiet. And your mind, like for just a second there, also becomes very quiet. And then you come, yeah, and then you're like, okay, right, I'm standing. And then you turn again. And then it's like those shampoo instructions, you know, rinse and repeat. And then you repeat. And then you keep doing that as long as you like. And that will vary for you from day to day or whatever. But the idea is that you're able to bring awareness to a simple, repetitive motion, like walking. And the rhythm of walking somehow is soothing and calming, and it brings you back into your body. And when you're back in your body, it naturally brings you back into the present moment, because you can't be walking at any other time than the time you're at. Otherwise, it's very difficult to maintain your balance. So it's a very natural way to bring you into the present moment. And it's also a way, if you're just sort of decompressing, like at first when you're walking, like I do this when I first come back to my kuti sometimes, as I walk, I just let the day drain out, you know. I just let all the things that happen in the day, they just drain out as I walk. Like letting the thoughts come, but not like introducing more thoughts along that line. So just letting them come up and letting them release, letting them come up, letting them release, and letting all your stuff come up and release naturally as you walk, back and forth, back and forth. And it can be nice to start doing that before you sit, because then you've kind of already loosened up your mind and decompressed a little bit. And it brings your mind to a certain level of wakefulness or mindfulness before you even sit down, which is a more subtle kind of object to watch. So that's something you can do. Or, you know, people are different. Some people like to walk after they sit. So just experiment. And like I said, the schedule is only a suggestion, so you just do whatever your mind feels like doing and your body feels like doing. Sometimes when you sit too long, you just need to stand up and move, and then that's a great time to do walking meditation. So just, yeah, do what feels natural to you. So that's walking meditation. I find, though, that if you want to work with feelings, it's a bit difficult when you're moving, too. Like, it's just too many things to watch. So for actually experiencing, feelings might come up as you walk. And when that happens to me when I'm walking on the meditation path and a really strong emotion or feeling comes up, sometimes I just stop and I just stand. And then I allow myself to, like, just come into contact with that feeling in my body while I'm standing, because that's a bit more, like, focused. And then if you decide that, okay, well, I want to actually sit down, then you can. But yeah, I think it's a bit difficult to try to work with feelings as well as moving. So that's something that I find easier to do when I'm sitting. So shall we do a bit of sitting then? Do you want to stand up first and let it limber up? Or if you're happy to, yeah, maybe take a moment. Stand up. Get the blood flowing. Get the carbs digested. Or not. Okay. So we can just settle again to a comfortable posture. I won't run through it in detail like last night, but just you can quickly check the basic parts of your posture, like how your seat, where you're sitting, where your bottom is on your chair, your cushion, feeling that's balanced and comfortable. And straightening up the back all the way so it's super straight, and then releasing so it's comfortable. And then opening up the chest. So again, sort of send the message to your mind to open up to your experience, whatever it may be. And easing your shoulders, your arms, your hands, however you want to put them in experiment. And then make sure your legs are comfortable. If something's putting too much pressure on your foot or something, you can move it. And then very importantly, your face. Just relaxing the whole face. Gently soothing and calming your mind by calming down and releasing any tension in your face. Feeling what it feels like to sit here right now. And relaxing into the moment. How does your mind feel? What's going on? Is it very quiet? Or do you have thoughts running around in there? Just remember that anything goes. Everything belongs and is allowed. So any feelings you might feel, what are they? You don't even have to give it a name if it's not obvious what it is called. But whatever it is, find it in your body. Where do you feel it? What's the texture of it? Or the smell of it, so to speak? Which part of the body do you feel it most strongly in? You don't feel any particularly strong emotions, but you might be thinking a fair bit. Then ask yourself, actually, where do I feel this thinking in my body? If there might be any tightness in your head even, your forehead. It can be helpful to imagine yourself breathing in whatever you're feeling, even if it's a physical discomfort, not necessarily emotional, but any area of feeling in your body that feels a bit uncomfortable or tight. Just imagine breathing it in into your heart, not your literal heart, but that area in your chest that we call, you know, the heart. Imagine your heart becoming wider and wider, like big enough to accommodate and allow whatever your feeling is into your heart. And on the out-breath, just releasing and relaxing even more. So opening up even more on the out-breath. So you can try doing that if you like for a little while, seeing what it feels like when we open to things. So breathing it into your heart and opening further on the out-breath, even feelings that we normally don't find pleasant or consider unwanted. And even breathing those ones in and opening to them and opening further on the out-breath. And even if you're feeling peace or a sense of calm, try experimenting with breathing that into your heart, opening to it, embracing it, and fully experiencing even the pleasant feelings. And breathing out, you like relax and open even further. So remember that whenever we have feelings, they might come along with thoughts about it, whatever it is that provoked the feeling. So try to just drop thoughts, drop the story, be in the body, and come back to the felt experience of your feeling or emotion. So the feeling subsides and you feel a bit calmer. You can just turn your attention to the breath. That can be your neutral area of focus. But if any more thoughts or feeling arise, you can try the exercise again, breathing it into your heart and opening. So let's just sit together for a little while, trying this out. Or you prefer meditating in another way, you can also do that. So we'll sit together for maybe another 20 minutes or so. So just enjoy whatever experience arises. Or if your mind starts to drift into thinking, again, try asking, where in the body do you feel this thinking process? And relax that. Or if your body is starting to feel uncomfortable anywhere, just try breathing in that discomfort. Or if it's very uncomfortable, then you can maybe shift your posture a little bit. If you sit longer, you start to feel a bit restless. Again, find out where that restlessness is felt in your body. Where does it manifest in your body? And breathe that one in and open. we're getting close to the end of this short sitting. It's always helpful at the end to just check in with yourself again. How does your mind feel? How is it different from when you first started sitting? How did you experience whatever happened in between? Were you feeling like you were able to open to it? Were there times when you felt you couldn't? But just a quick review that helps us learn more about our minds and what attitudes are ways of orienting our mind leads us to greater peace, and what attitudes to the opposite. And if you do feel even a little bit more quiet or relaxed or at ease, and rejoice in that. We can appreciate every bit counts. And sharing whatever peace we feel with other beings, so we can end by wishing for all beings, including ourselves, to be well and happy, be free from all suffering, to live with ease, and to be fully and truly liberated. So I'll ring the bell 3 times, and you can just slowly come out of meditation as you listen to the bell. Or anyone who would like to sit longer or further, you're also welcome to. So, gently coming out. So there's a little time now for any questions, if anyone had any. Or if you don't, then you're welcome to sit further or walk or go up and have a nice walk through the bush. So anything you'd like to do is totally welcome. Feel free. So see you again at 3 o'clock for anyone who'd like to come to the afternoon session. So again, I'll just end by paying respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Whoever likes to join can, and if you don't feel comfortable, that's totally fine too. So I had a note that someone would like to speak to me, so I can meet you in the vestibule in right opposite from the kitchen where you have that table and the chairs there, so I can see you there right now. So I'll go there, and I guess whoever turns up, I'll talk to you then.